All right, Rabosai. Good morning, Afrelich and Purim. Let's begin. We're picking up. Today's daf is Mem Tes Amud Aleph. We are picking up. Well, today's daf is Mem Tes. We're picking up on Mem Tes Amud Aleph, four lines down from the top. Gufa. Says the Gemara, Gufa. Amar Rav Nachman. So Rav Nachman said the following. Amana hayu dvarinu in ne'emana. So we'll say, remember again, we're going back to the cases, one of the cases that was stated in yesterday's daf, this idea that what happens if a shtar is produced and the Eden go ahead and say, yes, that is our signature, it's absolutely our signature on the shtar, but it was an amana. Now, both say, now, shtar amana, as we saw in yesterday's daf, is essentially, again, a shtar that said, it's a shtar that reads as if a transaction already occurred. But in reality, it's a shtar that is a promise to engage in this transaction in the future. So we'll say, so again, here's the deceiving, not the deceiving, but here's the misleading part of it. Again, it looks as if the transaction already occurred, but in fact, again, lemaisa, what's happened over here is the transaction will occur. That's amana, is a lashon of trustworthiness. We're putting this down in writing now, because just where's the trust element in this? The trust element in this is that the borrower trusts the creditor not to try to collect on this debt before it actually occurs. So what happens? They even come along and say, Amana hayu dvarinu. This transaction actually never occurred, but this document foreshadows a future transaction. So what's the halacha? Ein ne'emanin. So we'll say they are not to believe. On the other hand, Modah hayu dvarinu ein ne'emanin. Furthermore, again, if they say modah, so let's say they go out and they say, this particular transaction occurred, but it was done under duress. So therefore, again, we recorded a shtar moda. We recorded another document that indicated that this was done under duress. So they're not believed as well. So we'll say, according to Rav Nachman, any time witnesses come along and try to go ahead and retell the narrative, you know, we'll say, a shtar tells a story. Shtar tells a story. So, the power of that story is that it's committed to writing, and the power of that story is that it is solidified by the signatures of the witnesses. If the Edom come along and try to retell that narrative, they are not believed. I don't know who that is in the back, but Mamish. Okay, good. So right, anytime they try to go ahead and retell that narrative, so Lemaisa again. I gotta get my train of thought back down. So you see the Malach HaMavis first thing in the morning. It's not pashut. Mayor, I wouldn't sit there if I were you. I don't know. unless you've got some significant zchuyos. In any event, so let's say, so again, so according to Rav Nachman, anytime you try to go ahead and retell the narrative of the shtar, you are not believed. The shtar stands on its own. So whether you try to say it's a shtar amana, whether you try to say it's a moda'a, the halacha is you are not believed. On the other hand, Umar Baravashi says, Amana hayu dvarinu ein ne'emanu. So we'll say, Umar Baravashi says, at the end of the day, the following. If you say that this shtar was a shtar amana, so then the Edim are not believed. However, moda'a hayu dvarinu. But if they say that our words were a moda'a, then ne'emanu, they are believed. So we'll say, my taima, what's the distinction between these two things? My taima, shezeh nitan likasev, bezeh lo nitan likasev. So we'll say, the Gemara seems to draw a very simple distinction. That Jabosai, it is permitted to write down a moda'a, it is not permitted to write down an amana. So we'll say, if you take a look at the Rashbam for just a moment, so you see the Rashbam, Mar Baravashi, see that Rashbam about halfway down in the intermediate lines. Baruch atah Adonai Eloheinu melech olam shehakol nehiyeh bidvaro. So the Rashbam writes following, Mar Baravashi Omra Amona Hayu Dvarinu Ein Ne'emanin. Writes the Rashbam, Kedemefarish Lekamei Shelo Nitan Lekasev Kedeprishis Leel Mishum Dichsev Al Tishkon Ba'ohalecha Avlo. So both sides, the Rashbam quoted earlier on that the Pasuk in Mishlei says, do not allow an Avlo. An Avlo means a transgression or an iniquity to reside within your tent. So Chazal darshan that ultimately to refer to this shtar amana. So we'll say, since this particular type of shtar ultimately is a stumbling block and opens the door for a creditor to take advantage of a borrower, so Chazal said, do not allow it to remain in your home. In other words, bottom line, you are not allowed to write the shtar amana, which is a very important halacha, because it could be very tempting. Let's say I want to lend Reuven money. It happens to be, I have the time now, the sofer is here, the edim are here. Let's just draw up the document and we trust each other. So the document itself is going to say, I lent you $1,000, but again, I might not be lending you the $1,000 until tomorrow, until the next week, but it's convenient to draw up the shtar, and we're both okay. We, being the borrower creditor, are both okay because we trust each other. The halacha is about to say, you cannot draw up a shtar like that, because at the end of the day, that shtar is false. Remember how a shtar reads. The shtar reads that I, Shmuel Silber, lent Reuven $1,000 on so-and-so date in front of so-and-so witnesses, we encumbered so-and-so properties, and if that transaction did not actually occur, as it is stated in the shtar, then that is a false document. I, we trust each other, it doesn't matter, let's have a modah. Therefore, we'll say, Mar Bar Avashi's logic is like this. If witnesses come along and produce a shtar, I should say a shtar is produced, and witnesses say, well, that was a shtar amana. That transaction actually never occurred. It foreshadowed a transaction that would occur. The Edim are not ne'emanin. Why are they not ne'emanin? Why are they not believed? Because Lamaisa, it is illegal to write such a shtar. On the other hand, look at the next Rashbam. If they said Moda'o Hayu Dvarenu, if they said that this is a shtar Moda'o, that this document, that Reuven sold this property but was done under duress, and we recorded that in a shtar, then they are believed. Rashbam says, why? Shahari nitan likasev. Because Rabbi says, shtar moda'a should be written down. The mitzvah ka'avdi kedei lahatzi la'ones me'anso. Because Rabbi says, remember again, if somebody is forced to sell under duress, the only record they have of that duress is if they demonstrate in front of witnesses that indeed this transaction is occurring under duress. The witnesses record that in document form so that later on the party who was forced to sell has some level of legal recourse. So we'll say, so therefore again, a modah is permitted to be written down. Fine. So back to the Gemara. So bottom line, we also, the Rambam, the Shulchan Aruch, accepts the position of Mar Bar Avashi, that if witnesses come forward later on and say, that shtar that we produced is not a real shtar, but it's a shtar amana, they are not believed. The reason they're not believed is because it is illegal to write such a shtar. On the other hand, again, if they say that Lamaisa, a shtar is produced, but they say that there is a Moda'a, there is another shtar that ultimately indicates that this transaction was done under duress, they are believed because a Moda'a is committed to writing. Good. So weiter. Below ish, chazaka v'nichse ishto. So we'll say the next case the Mishnah said, remember, the Mishnah was dealing with a fascinating set of circumstances. And that fascinating set of circumstances dealt with people who have the right to be in certain places or in possession of certain things cannot establish a chazaka for those very things. So for example, if I'm a sharecropper and I have been living, or I should say working, a particular piece of land for 3 years, I can't turn around and say what? Right? I can't say, oh, you see, I've been using this land uninterrupted for 3 years, the owner never voiced any objection to my presence. What do you see? This is a chazaka, I'm the owner of the land. And we'll say, why can't you establish chazaka that way? Because what do we say back to the sharecropper? You had rishus to be there. Meaning, the fact that the owner didn't object to your presence, obviously, you're working for the owner. That's not a chiddush. So the ma'aseh, at the end of the day, I can't establish chazaka. The same way that the uman, right? If the uman has a kli, so what happens? Well, if the uman has a kli in his possession, he can't claim chazaka because lamaisi has the right to have that kli. So the next example that the Mishnah brought down is below ish benichsei ishto. In below ish chazaka benichsei ishto, that a man cannot claim chazaka if he uses the property of his wife for 3 years. Can't claim chazaka. Why, Rabbi Osei? Because the husband has the right to use his wife's property. Says the Gemara Pshita. Isn't that obvious? Kevan de islei lepera peru de ka'achel. So Rabbi Osei, a husband gets peros. So this takes us back to our Kiddushin days. Take a look at the Rashbam for just a moment. So the Rashbam says Pshita. pshita, the ein yachol litom lakoach ubiyadi. It's obvious that a husband can't claim that he is the owner of the property. Kevan the isle peiro, the Rashbam says, b'takonas chachamim shetiknu peiro shal nichse isha labal, tachas pirkuna. Bosa, if you remember again, the Chazal gave the husband the rights to peiros in the property of his wife in exchange for the obligation that he has to redeem her if she is taken captive. Right, a husband has to redeem his wife if she's taken captive. Also, it's an important takeaway message for today. Right, a husband, if your wife's taken captive, the husband has to redeem her. Whether you have peiros or not, you should redeem her. This farm bring down. It's important to redeem her regardless. Right, but the idea over here is that Lamaisa, Chazal awarded him a financial reward of the peiros from her nechasim, from any property that she brings in. So says the Gemara, it's obvious that he can't go ahead and establish a chazaka on her property because he doesn't have ownership, he just has peiros. So Rashbam says, "Ve'ein lo beguf." First white line of Rashbam, "Ve'ein lo beguf hakarka klum." Ve'ein tzricha limchos shakol yodin shebetoras peros yar the karkazu velo l'dmei l'mashkanta. So this, I'm sorry, velo dmei l'mashkanta. So we're not going to get into right now. So says Rashbam the following. Says the Gemara the following: if a husband is using his wife's property, obviously she's not going to object to that usage. Why? Because the ma'aseh he has peros. So because he has peros, she has no reason to object to his usage. Therefore, his usage, even for a sustained period of 3 years, does not establish chazak on her behalf. Back to the Gemara. Lo tzricha dekasev la din udvarim eli menechsayich. All right, what's the case over here? The case over here is dealing with a husband who wrote to his wife, "I have nothing to do with your property." Dinu dvarim el b'nechsayich means I have nothing with your property. Which Shavuos say sounds like, what is he doing? He's relinquishing peros. That's what it sounds like. He's relinquishing peros. So I would have thought like this: in a case where the husband says dinu dvarim el b'nechsayich, that I have no peros in your property, I would have thought that when he uses her property, then lemaisa what? That should be demonstrative of chazak. In other words, when do we say that a husband doesn't have chazak on his wife's property? When he's receiving peros. But if he's not receiving peros, and he says, dinu dvarim eli b'nechsayich, so then when he does use it, that should be demonstrative of chazakah. To which the Gemara says, but 1 second, v'chi kasev la my habi. I will say, even if he wrote dinu dvarim eli b'nechsayich, so does that work at all? V'hatanya, we learned, homer l'chavero dinu dvarim eli asadazu, ve'eli isek ba v'yade misulakes mimena lo amar klum. Yet, Rabbi say, we learned that what? That if a person says to his friend, "I have nothing to do with this field," Rabbi say, now what we're talking about over here is a situation of shutfim, right? That, let's say, again, people are either partners in a field or someone is trying to convey ownership to someone else. So let's say I say to my friend, "I have nothing to do with this field." I'm a partner with Reuven on the field. And I say to Reuven, "I have nothing to do with this field." Or ve'inli esek ba, I have no involvement in it. Yadi misulekes mimena, my hands are removed from this field. Rabbi will say, what's that halacha? Lo amar klum. Such a statement is meaningless. Why? Look at the Rashbam, fourth line in. Or fifth line from the bottom. So fourth line from the top of the wide lines, fifth line from the bottom of the wide lines. Lo amar klum, de'in ze lashon matano, kisha amar lo yeheli chilek b'shali, dar karcho hu shelo, at shiomar lechavero, sadai nusuna lecha, sadai mechura lecha, sadai mufkeres lecha, mishiyerta. So Rabbi say, in order to convey ownership, you have to use more specific and precise lashonos. You can either say, again, I'm being mafkir this, I make this hefker. You could say, I'm conveying this to you as a matana, as a gift, but you have to use specific lashon of conveyance. To say that I had nothing to do with a property, that by itself is a meaningless lashon. That doesn't do anything. So therefore, says the Gemara, I understand. If a husband says to his wife, "Dinu dvarim eli b'nechsayich," I have nothing to do with your property, the Gemara is suggesting that that represents his yielding of the rights of his peros. But we know that what? That such a lashon, in fact, is totally ineffective. It doesn't mean anything. So rather, says the Gemara, Amri la. So the Gemara said, "Lo amar klom amri la debei Rabbi Yanai masnisin bekosev lava oda arusa." Oh, both say right. Under normal circumstances, when you make a statement of din udvarim ainli benechsayech or din udvarim in general, when you say I have nothing to do with something, that statement is meaningless. Except both say one situation: if you go ahead and you make a statement like this before the property or the rights come into your possession or into your domain. So such a lashon of din udvarim works to prevent you from acquiring the rights. Now, Rabbi said, listen to the following distinction. There's a distinction between, it's an interesting distinction. There's a distinction between yielding a right that you already possess versus blocking that right from ever vesting. Oh, is that good? Vesting? Attorneys? Right, good, thank you. Right. So a chilik between yielding a right you already possess and blocking a right from vesting from the beginning. So when you already have an entitlement, when you already own something, when you already have something, so to divest yourself from ownership of that right requires specific lashon. So if I am a husband and I have right in my wife's peros, so at the end of the day, I can't say I have nothing to do with this. I have to say, I have to use some specific lashon. I'm a partner in a field and I want to yield my ownership interest, so I have to go ahead and use a specific lashon of matana or a specific lashon of hefker. But if I don't yet have the right, and I want to prevent the right from devolving upon me, from vesting in me, then a simple lashon of, I want nothing to do with this, prevents the right from vesting. Says the Gemara Kitabiana. So the Gemara says, so that's why Rabiana says, what's the case? Masnisin, because save love, oda arusa. Oh, remember again from our Kiddushin days, when does a husband get rights in his wife's property? Only when? Only as of Nisuin. Only as of Nisuin. Only after full and complete marriage. So therefore, again, if during Erusin he were to say to her, Din udvarim inli benichsayich, I have nothing to do with your property, then halacha lemaisa, that would be a proper lashon. Take a look at the Rashbam for just a moment. Ba'oda arusa, tahinu kodim sheyiske benichsei ishto, de'ino zocha beperos, ad shas nisuin. So if you were to write, dinu dvarim eli benichsayich, before nisuin, right, before the rights vested, then lemaisa, again, that would work. Says Gemara Kudrav Kahana, Dharmav Kahana, because Rav Kahana said, we'll say, Amud Beis, nachalo haba lo li odom imakum acher. So we'll say, if a person has, you're right, nachala means a portion. A person has a halachic right that is coming to him from somewhere else. Adam masna aleha shelo yirashena. We'll say, if I have a right that is coming to me from some external source, a person has the right to go ahead and make a condition that he not inherit that right. So we'll say, so therefore again, the Gemara is suggesting the following. So therefore the Gemara is suggesting that lamaisa, the only case of dinu dvarim eli benichsayich, right? So we'll say, remember, let's go for a circle back here. So remember again, we're trying to figure out the case of the Mishnah, of where the Mishnah tells me that a husband cannot go ahead and create a chazakah on his wife's property. So the Gemara said, obviously, he only has peros, he doesn't have the kinyan aguf, he doesn't actually own anything. To which the Gemara answered, it's a case where what? It's a case where lemaisa, he wrote, dinu dvarim eli benichsayich. He wrote again, I have no rights in your property. To which the Gemara says, but one second, does such a lashon work? To which the Gemara answers, yeah, it works when. When ultimately, again, she was an arusa. So we'll say, so the way the Gemara is setting up the case over here is the following. That the case over here is where a husband, during Erusin, said to his wife, Din udvarim einli be'echsayich, which means what, Rabosai? I want nothing to do with your property, which translates to us as meaning what? Good, I can hear the crickets. Wonderful. Right, sorry. What does it mean? It means, again, that I'm yielding my rights in your peros. So now what the Gemara is suggesting is the following. That halacha lemaisa, even in such a situation like that, a husband cannot create a chazakah in his wife's property. That's the chiddush over here. That even in a situation where the husband proactively yielded his rights in the beiros, still if he occupies her land for 3 years uninterrupted, with uninterrupted use, that does not establish chazakah. Now we'll discuss why that is. So we'll say, and furthermore, again, one more piece, Ukid Rava, and I will say, all of this is in accordance with the grander shita, or the more global shita of Rava. The Amar Rava, I will say, is an amazing idea. That anyone who says, I have no interest in a takanas chachamim, I have no interest in this rabbinic enactment like this, we listen to those and I don't get too excited about this. What does this mean? What this means is the following. We'll define what the kigon zos means in just a moment. But the idea over here is that lamaisa, if Chazal instituted something on my behalf, to benefit to me, then we are going to see that under certain circumstances, I have the right to say, no thank you. No thank you. Thank you, Chazal, for advocating on my behalf. Thank you, Chazal, for giving me this particular right. But it's okay, I'm yielding the right. Mikey Gonzu, so the Gemara says, what does it mean? What does it mean that anyone who says it's okay, I don't want the Tachanos Chacham, I don't want the rabbinic enactment, Kigon Zos, like this one we listen to him. What's the like this one? Kidrav Huna Amarav, Damrav Huna Amarav, Yechol Isha Shetomer Labayla, Eini Nizones Ve'Eini Osa. Rabbi said, a woman could say to her husband, I have no interest in being supported by you, and therefore I'm not giving you my earnings. Bosei, remember again, we learned before, that what? That Lamaisa, a woman is supported by her husband, and there's a certain quid pro quo. Because she has that right of support, Chazal awarded her husband her earnings. Bosei, let's say you have a woman who earns, Baruch Hashem, a lot of money. So she says, you know what? It's okay. I'd rather keep my earnings, and I will support myself. So she has the right to say that. Because since Chazal gave her support as a schus for, as a benefit for her, if she decides, you know what, I don't want it, I'd rather keep my money, that's absolutely within her right to do so. So bottom line says the Gemara the following. Bottom line is halacha lemaaseh, the Gemara suggesting that we're dealing over here with a case where what? Where the husband, even if he occupies the wife's land for 3 years, uninterrupted, she doesn't say a thing. She doesn't say a thing to him, that Lamaisi does not establish chazaka. What's the case? The case is where he must have yielded peros already during Erisin. So therefore, again, he has no peros in her land. And again, despite all of that, even if he goes ahead and lives there for 3 years, halacha Lamaisi at the end of the day, he does not establish chazaka. Fine. So the Gemara says, but there's an inference from this. What's the inference? Haraya yesh. So we'll say, look at the Rashbam for just a moment. Haraya yesh. Diktoni masnisin. Ein leish chazaka. Shein chazaka mo elas lo lekay mekho. Ava rayas ro ri'iyas edim o shtar. Tawi lo lekay mechirasa. De machra lo ishto nichse mulug shela kanar. So the Gemara makes an interesting observation. What's the observation? The Gemara makes the observation the following. What we've just established now in the Mishnah is that a husband does not have the ability to establish chazaka in the property of his wife. So that's chazaka. What happens if he were to produce a shtar that says that she, his wife, sold him the property, or he were to produce edim, witnesses, who saw that he sold him, that she sold him the property, then halacha lemaaseh again, that raya would work, and he would be the rightful owner of the property. So says the Gemara, Tema nachas ruachasisi lebaili. So we'll say, so the Gemara challenges, and the Gemara says, I don't understand. Even if he produces edos, that says that what? That she sold him the land, she should have a counterclaim. We'll say, what's her counterclaim? Her counterclaim is Nachas Ruach Asisi Labaili, which means what? I was just trying to make my husband happy. I mean, I didn't really mean to sell him the land. I was just trying to make him happy. Take a look at the Rashbam for just a moment. Tema Nachas Ruach Asisi Labaili. Shemacherti lo, I sold him the land. Shelo yicho salai. That he shouldn't get upset at me. In other words, for whatever the reason, my husband wanted to buy the land from me. I wasn't interested in arguing with him, so I sold him the land. But did I really mean to sell him the land? Was I really conveying to him ownership over the property? Absolutely not. Absolutely not. Avalohoye bedaiti la amrin drashpam la haknoso. But I really had no intention to actually convey ownership to him. So we'll say, okay, Rashi just points out, this is not comparable to the case yesterday of someone who sells under duress, where Chazal said the sale is still valid. Again, here, she could just, I was just trying to make my husband happy. You know, it wasn't worth the argument, it wasn't worth the shalom bias. So Lamayis, he said he wanted to buy it, I let him buy it. But did I have actually any intention of selling him my property? Absolutely not. So why can't she have that thing? So what's the Gemara saying? The Gemara is inferring over here that a chazaka, a husband, doesn't have in his wife's property. But if he were to produce a raya of either a shtar or edus, that shtar or edus would actually work. But says the Gemara, why? Why can't she just say, nachas rachas sisi labayli? I was just trying to make my husband happy. To which the Gemara says, milo tanan, did we not learn? Lakach mina ish, v'chazav lakach mina isha, mekcho batal. Listen to this case. I purchased property from Reuven, Klum Reuven. Nebosa, you know, the halacha is, you know, whenever I do a wedding, we always go over the ksuv with the chasen line by line. Because it's important for the chasen to know what it is, what his responsibility is. So one of the most dramatic lines in the ksuvah is the ksuva is a unique document. There's nothing else like it in halacha. That a ksuva encumbers every single piece of property that a person owns and will ever own. Will ever own. V'kanoi u'da'asid ana l'mikni. Things that I own now, things that I will own. And of course, the other unique part is that a ksuva not only encumbers real property, but even movable property. V'afilu min galima da'al kasboi. Even the shirt on my back is encumbered to the ksuva. Which I will say is very interesting, because what that means is that whenever you buy property from a married man, you are buying encumbered property, because every single piece of his property is encumbered by his wife. Now, there are easy ways to deal with that. There are easy ways to deal with that is that you could lift the encumbrance over all of the fields by specifically designating certain fields. So we'll say, so the case over here is the following. I purchase a field from Reuven. Look at the Rashbam for just a moment. Lokach mina ish mina bal kol karka osa mishubadam ksuvas ishto. V'hayomu l'machrem yamos yigashenu tichrof milukucho. So we'll say, if I buy a field from Reuven, and today or tomorrow Reuven dies or he gets divorced, so technically speaking, his wife, when she wants to collect the ksuva, can collect the ksuva from the kuchos, from people who purchase property. So therefore, I have a good chab. So I buy a piece of property from Reuven, but here's my idea. I buy from Reuven, but I want to know that I own this property free and clear. So what do I do? What do I do? I go back and I purchase the wife's interest as well, however we quantify that. I go ahead and I purchase her interest as well, so that she's willing to lift her encumbrance off the field. Lakach mina ish v'chazav lakach mina isha, mikcho batal. Well, so the idea over here is, such a sale is invalid. Right, mikcho batal. Right now, by the way, the Rashbam points out, mikcho batal, he says, lo batal batal mamish. It doesn't literally mean that it's batal. In other words, we'll say, I could still use the field. The idea when it says batal is, a woman's not really going to release her encumbrance on that land. At the end of the day, we'll say, again, especially understanding from the Gemara's perspective, where a woman may have not had her own independent income stream, these properties were her lifeline in the event of death or divorce. So if I go ahead and I'm purchasing a field from Reuven, and I say, you know what, I want to own this field free and clear, so I go back to Mrs. Reuven, and I say, I'd like to buy you out of your encumbrance as well. And she says, okay. So again, the Gemara says, no. Mikho bitl means, I will say, I did not buy her encumbrance. And should her husband divorce her or die, and there is no other property in the estate, she has absolutely every right to come back to me, take the property from me in order to satisfy her ksuva. I will say, what do you see from here? But she sold it. But she said she sold it, right? Mrs. Reuven said to me, sure, I'm more than happy to go ahead and sell you my interest, my encumbrance. So what do you see from here? Alma, Amra, Nachas, Rachas, Isi, Labayli. I will say, what is she saying? What is she saying? She's saying, ultimately, again, Nachas, Rachas, Isi, Labayli. She could turn around and she could say, I didn't mean it. I was just trying to make my husband happy. Hachanami Soto over here, Tema, Nachas, Rachas, Isi, Labayli. Soto, I will say, she could say over here, in our case, I will say, even if he produces a shtar, right? Even if he produces a document that says ultimately a raya or edus that I bought the land, why is that raya binding? At the end of the day, she could simply say, nachas ruachas isi labayli. She could simply say that I was just doing it to make my husband happy. But I will stop over here. We'll pick up Emir Tzashem tomorrow morning again. So we're leaving off, just understand where we're leaving off. We're leaving off right now, just trying to understand over here, can you ever actually have a case of a husband who buys his property from his wife, and even if he produces a shtar or eidos that says that he did, will such a shtar be able to stand, or will she always be able to undermine every transaction by simply saying, Nachas ruach asisi lebaili, bosa emirat Hashem, to be continued tomorrow morning. Shkoyach.